and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of May 21st. It's late on a Saturday night again, so we're burning the midnight oil with Jim Allen. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing good. Burning the midnight oil. I wish I was burning the midnight fat, you know? I wish this was sort of like calorie control.
You don't have that much fat on your body, man. You're what are you?
Well,
like, I
fluctuate
17% to 18% fat.
Oh, back in the day, baby. That was a couple of years ago, you know, since I did my hip and not exercising. And then always this is a tough season after, you know, in the hay fever in the winter season, it's hard to get out and exercise as much. So I tend to put on a lot of weight. So, I'm on the rebound right now. I got to rebound downwards.
Yeah.
Get some of this winter fat off.
Yeah.
So I'm good. How are you doing?
Yeah. Yeah. I'll try to rebound too. But this has been a lifelong battle. So I don't know how far. I'm doing okay. It started to get warm and then it's getting cold for me. And I don't like that. You know that I don't like that. It's supposed to be warm. I was promised this in my contract when I moved to Tokyo. I don't want any cold maize. This is not cool.
Okay. Well. No, this is very cool, unfortunately, unseasonably cool. So,
I'll talk to my agent.
Live and learn.
I'll talk to my agent.
You do that. Let's see how well that goes.
All right.
So, Okay.
On this week's show, we've got a chat with Matt Dominguez of the Marines. We're going to talk about Lotte. We're going to take a look at both leagues, talk about some strong arms in the outfield and behind the plate, and hit some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so on May 12th, I got off at Seibu Kyujomai Station and went to MetLife Dome, and I caught up with first-year infielder Matt Dominguez of the Marines, and he's a Southern California kid who played with the Marlins organization and the Astros organization before coming in Japan this year. And he has shown some pop in the majors, even with the 42 homers and 48 doubles in 362 games over 5 years. But I don't know what kind of swings we can expect to get from him in NPB and what kind of playing time. And I went to talk to him on May 12th and mm-hmm. he hit a home run, a three-run home run on May 11th, the previous day. It was a three-run shot in a 12-3 win over the Lions, and he hit number two earlier today, the day we're taping, so another easy win. I think it was an 8-1 win they had over the SoftBank Hawks today. So, Lotte won 2 out of 3 in that series against the Lions, and they are winning at a clip that is not playoff worthy, but they're scrapping, and they don't have a lot of home. We'll get into what's going on with their season here once we listen to the interview and talk about that. But you know, he's definitely can add some pop to that lineup in spots, and he's a laid back guy, California dude. So let's take a listen.
We're with Matt Dominguez, who's from Van Nuys, right?
Yeah, Van Nuys.
Yeah, Van Nuys, California. So two California guys talking today, this week on the show. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
All right, so how has this month plus, or I guess, did you start here with camp in February in the cold?
We started camp in Ishigaki,
February 1st.
Yeah, February 1st, but I got out here January 25th or 6th to Tokyo, to Chiba. So, yeah, been out here a while now.
So how's the whole experience been so far?
It's been good. Can't complain. They've been very friendly and very welcoming, and, it's been a little different, an adjustment, but I've had a good time so far.
All right, so what's different from what you anticipated this whole experience being?
I've talked to guys that have played over here, and kind of just the whole more of everything before the game. Batting practice different, taking infield every day before the game is a little different, stretching's different, so they work very hard out here, and I know they try to take care of the foreign guys when they've done a good job, so I've liked it.
Is it what you heard about, or is it slightly different from what you expected?
Well, I know every team's a little different. I know our manager; he played in the States for 4 or 5 years, and So I know they've made a few changes, but it's kind of what I expected. And, I know they, like I said, they take care of the foreign, they don't expect you to do quite everything that these guys do, so.
Yep, got to stay fresh.
Yeah.
All right, well, speaking of the manager, yeah, he did play in the States. He's a World Series winner. What's it like playing under him?
It's been cool. I remember watching him with the White Sox, and he's a great player. And I know he was playing with his team last year, and it's been a good experience so far.
So this team has been stealing bases like crazy, and it didn't do that last year. What's your role in being aggressive on the base pass?
I'm not sure that's what they brought me over here for. So I'm just trying to go base to base and maybe take an extra base here or there. So there's a lot of these guys are young players and fast, and that's never really been part of my game.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, you got a couple of rookies and a second-year player who are getting regular time on the field.
Crazy day.
How do you get out on the field when you've got to battle past those guys as well? Because this team obviously finished in last place last year, has some rebuilding to do.
Yeah. I think it's just a lot of DHing and playing, rotating in the first whenever they need me. And, it's not really my decision. I just go out there and play when they tell me to play.
Now, I know you got sent down to the minor league. What did you work on when you were down there on the farm? Because I know a lot of these guys have funky motions, and it's hard to get the timings, and they pitch backwards, and there's all kinds of issues you got to deal with when you come over here as a first-year guy.
Yeah, I think they just wanted to give me more bats and, see the timing and the pitching and the sequencing of the very thing, just getting more comfortable with things. And I think once they realized I was a little more comfortable and having better and better at bats, they felt more comfortable about bringing me up.
And what's it like trying to learn about all these pitchers and the catchers here?
Yeah, I mean, even back in the States, it's, more and more you see pitchers and the more you get familiar with them and know their tendencies. But, yeah, it's a little tough. I mean, the scouting department does a good job over here kind of getting us ready and showing us video, but you really don't know until you go up there and face somebody. So seeing a guy more and more definitely helps.
Now, you're just now studying these guys, and then in a couple weeks you're going to have to play against the Central League and Interleague for about a month. How do you get ready for that? You don't laugh.
Yeah, I don't know. Just try not to overthink it and just get good pitches to hit, and they still got to throw it over the plate and still got to take good swings, so try not to overthink it.
Now, there's a lot of talk in the States about launch angle and swing path and this and that and the other. What did you change in your approach when you came over here and started facing these Japanese pitchers?
Nothing really. I mean, I think at first I was a little kind of cautious about the whole split, off speed, this and that, and now I'm just trying to go up there with a more conventional approach and just try to get a good fastball and good swing on it, and try realize what they're doing to me at the plate and just kind of think along with the pitcher.
All right, so in the WBC last year, a lot of the reporters from the States said they didn't realize that there were so many good pitchers over in Japan. So now you've come over here and you've seen the level a little bit. What do you think of some of the pitchers that you've seen?
It's very good baseball. Not only the pitchers, position players, but they know how to pitch. They're in and out. Off speed. Not to say their off speed pitchers are. They could locate those pretty well. I say probably better in the States. So that's probably been the biggest adjustment.
Well, what pitchers have impressed you so far? Even on your team.
I mean, watching Wakui throw last night was impressive. These guys go out and compete really hard, and it's fun to watch the competitive edge these guys have and how much work they put into it. Wakui's impressive. I mean, I've only been here 4 games, so it's kind of hard.
Yeah. I know. You saw some guys.
The guy from Rakuten was pretty. Kishi.
Kishi
was a very good pitcher.
Yeah. Okay, last one. These Lions look pretty tough. They score a lot of runs. They're pitching okay. And you guys had actually gave them a taste of their own medicine last night, beating them up pretty good. But how does your team compete and make up the difference that you guys have right now?
Yeah, like you said earlier, I think running and putting pressure on the bases is a big part of this team. Pitching's been good, getting some good starts. So as long as we get some guys on, get some pressure on the bases, and get some timely hits, I think we'll be all right.
That's what we'll be expecting from you then.
Yeah, I guess
Timely hits. Yeah. Last thing, not the stolen bases, right?
No. I wouldn't expect too many stolen bases, no.
Sometimes I joke, the only time I'm going to steal a base is if I have a gun and a mask.
Yeah, exactly. That's me.
All right, bud. Take care. Thanks a lot.
No problem.
All right, thanks a lot, Matt. Really appreciate talking to you, and really appreciate the time.
Yeah, real pleasure hearing. I enjoyed that. You sounded like you were under a little stress, like your questions were not working out the way you wanted them. But yeah, that happens sometimes. I certainly can sympathize.
Did I sound that way? I didn't mean to. He was fine. I think.
Right.
You know, I think I've talked to you about when you get one of those real hot interviews and you just can't wait to let someone hear it or to get it. Like we've had really fun interviews that I couldn't wait to post the podcast, and maybe this was not up at the top of the list because he did give some answers that were like cookie cutter answers in some situations. In fact, remember Brian Schlitter, who answered a bunch of questions that I didn't really ask last year? Matt had one of those instances when I asked him about how he could get into the lineup and ahead of the other guys. He gave us the old manager is the guy who calls the shots. And I'm like, yeah, well, obviously, but we want to know what you can do as a player to make the manager write your name in the lineup I didn't get the answer, but I wasn't frustrated.
It's just that, I know that one of the questions that you like to ask is the question, what can this team do to compete? And I find that it's sort of a slot machine question. Sometimes you can get really good answers, but by and large, most of the times I ask that question, I get an answer like, keep doing what we're doing.
Or win games. Like, the obvious question, the obvious answer is win games.
play as well as we can because I'm focused on what I'm doing. I can't really change what anybody else is doing. And sometimes you get really insightful stuff, but it's such a hard one. It's such a hard question to be insightful about that I pretty much don't ask it. So every time it wasn't you who was nervous. It was me who was getting nervous when you asked the question. I'm going,
oh, not that again, he says.
The thought crossed my, well, it doesn't take long for thoughts to cross my mind. There's not much mind to cross, but when I hear that, I'm going, oh no, okay, watch out. So, but I enjoyed it, and I'm just gonna, I'll tell you what a couple of things I really liked. I liked, the simple and the very down to earth way about, he talked about his grafting his approach into Japanese baseball, or taking his what worked for him elsewhere and applying it to Japanese baseball. It's really simple. Get the measure of what the pitchers are trying to do to you and how the game is, and then look for fastballs. I love that because that's so I like that plan because you got to start, me in plans, you got to start with something.
Have a plan.
If you just go up there. Yeah. If your plan is to go up and hit better, well, what's better? What's better or what's worse? It's too many moving parts. So he eliminated all the moving parts and said, I'm going to look for fastballs and that'll be one. And I guess he's got a plan B, but yeah, look for when they're going to throw you fastballs. And people say there are no fastball counts in Japan, but that's really not true. It's less true than it is in America, but the pitchers are human beings and the catchers are human beings and managers are human beings. And
no, they're not. You stopped that. 2 weeks ago, we had this problem.
okay.
No, I kid. I apologize. We were talking about umpires that time. So
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, they're not. They get them from the planet Tramadol. Yeah, they were invented by Kurt Vonnegut. So no, so there was that, and I love that. I just love that idea. You know, it was so simple and so, you know, you knew what he was trying to do. It's not just, I mean, even, you know, listening to Casey McGee, I expect him to describe, you know, his, I'm a feel guy. You know, it's sort of like, I wonder if he's up there hitting or he's trying to, you know, write a symphony.
Oh, you know, it's come just
like,
on.
Like, I mean, you know, I know what works. I know what sounds good to me. And it's a really complicated, hard to understand process is what I mean with Casey. I mean, he says, you know, it's instinctive and it's all feel. So, which is, you know, it's no problem, but I can't understand it. You know, I can't understand what his feel feels like to me. But when he says, when Matt said, described it as he did, I thought, wow, that's so clear, so concrete. This guy's got a future as an analyst, I think, when he admits how old he is, you know, in public, that he remembers seeing Higuchi play with the White Sox.
Well, yeah, he's 28 for a few more months, so he'll be 29, but yeah.
So what, he was like in grade school.
Well, that's old enough to be cognizant of
I reckon,
baseball.
I reckon.
Yeah. Yeah.
I reckon. I reckon.
For a Southern California kid, yeah, it does seem kind of odd that he would remember. But remember, Higuchi did spend some time in San Diego as well.
He finished in San Diego or Philadelphia, both of those teams. So
that's it's all very possible. Yeah. You know, he's so young. He seemed like a pup to me. And it's so weird for me to say that about a guy who's going to be 29 in a couple months or a few months. But, yeah, let's not think about my age. He's a newbie.
I tell you, I went the whole day without thinking about your age, John. Why do you have to start?
Thank you. No, I finished. I didn't start. I finished.
Okay, good.
That's
good in a marathon.
Yes, that's true.
Okay.
He's such a newbie, and he asked me how long I'd been in Japan. I think it was after we talked, or even maybe before we talked, and I said, yeah, probably about the time you were born. And he said, yeah, I was born in 89. I'm like, okay, I arrived about a year after that, so I was right on. But you know, I didn't.
Yeah.
You know, I think him saying that you say put it simply, and I say he's hunting for fastballs. And that was a telling statement for me. I mean, good luck. And I think he hit a fastball today for a home run. So, it's not that I don't think he'll see that many. He's going to see them. But it just reminded me of Craig Brazel, who said, "Hey, look, when I see the pitch I'm waiting for coming, I don't really care where it is, location wise. If I can reach it with my bat, I'm swinging." But I did like the fact that Lotte put him on the farm early to get him used to the pitch sequencing. And he discussed that in the chat, talking about how, you know, how they're going to approach him and try to get him in those things. And so now, you know, it's just about pitchers executing the pitch or him getting on the mistakes and hammering them. And obviously he really liked my joke about stealing bases with a gun and a mask.
Well, somebody's gotta. I mean, it's just law of averages, man.
What are you saying about my joke, man? Law of averages.
It was really nice. It was really good. Hey, he liked it. He must have a good sense of humor.
He's a California dude, man. Come on. A Southern California guy. Fair enough. Yeah. So, yeah, I liked talking to him. It was really fun. And like I said, we chatted a little bit after the interview, and wish him luck. I hope he has some success. There are a lot of foreigners. There's such a new crew of foreigners there that for the team to learn about those guys and how they're going to react in situations and all that, I think it's going to take a while. So I don't know if he's going to really have a lot of time to show what he can do the first season here. And again, they've got the young players who are getting more time than most of the foreigners. Right. So it's going to be hard to get on the field. He's got to produce. And so he had a pinch hit home run today. And as a pinch hitter, if you come in and produce, even if it's a game that's kind of a route at the time, it was kind of a route at the time, he just added on a couple more runs. Mm-hmm. You know, it's impressive.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's some teams, you know, I've written about this probably enough to induce vomiting, but you know, the Hanshin Tigers used to pretty much use pinch hitting as their ticket to the first team. You know, with all their young players, you know, they'd bring them up from the farm. They'd be, you know, hitting 400 in the Western League, and they bring them up and let's see how they can pinch hit in clutch situations in their first experience at the top team. And if they succeed time after time,
mm-hmm.
then they'd let them stay on the first team. But usually they'd fail and they'd go back and let them kick around the minors some more and bring them back up. And basically, you couldn't play on the first team until you proved you could be a pinch hitter. You couldn't be a regular until you proved you could be a pinch hitter. So, you know, it was, I don't know what, but that was sort of a Tigers institution. I don't know other teams do that, any other teams that do that. Listeners probably know better than me. But yeah, it is hard, and I think they do. But, you know, I was interested in the notion, and I haven't talked to any Marines players this year about this, the notion that the team is managed a certain way because Higuchi played in the majors, and certainly I do want to talk to Higuchi, and I haven't. So that's sort of on my little season bucket list.
Okay.
So before the season dies, that's one thing.
Yeah, I did get a chance to talk to him for about a minute, but no deep conversation. He just seems really busy. You know, he's got that manager walk now, that pregame manager walk, where I've got some place to be. I don't know exactly where it is, but it ain't here.
Yeah, it's somewhere. It's right. It's somewhere between this door, this place I'm standing, and the place where you're not.
Well, let's talk
but
about.
But I'm thankful, you know, I'm going to, this is just a digression, but you know, I'm thankful for Yoshinobu Takahashi, because he's adopted Tatsunori Hara's trick, which is I'll talk to one reporter on my way to stand behind the backstop and you know, and chew my nails.
Uh-huh. To watch batting practice. Cage. Yes. Yeah.
Right. To stand there and talk to other reporters who've got more seniority than you. So at least he'll stop if you ask him a question, and Tatsunori Hara did that. So
yep.
I appreciate that. Some managers don't. So,
yep.
Okay.
All right. Well, let's talk about where the Marines are not. And that's, they are not at the top of the food chain in the Pacific League. They are down toward the bottom, but I like what Tadahito Higuchi is doing as the leader of the Marines. He's really aggressive in his first year as the manager. And you know, I don't know if it was his decision or not to bring out these young players and say, hey, let's see what we've got. I know Yudai Fujioka, he's a second round pick, or it's their second pick in the mm-hmm. draft last year. So, I don't know if it was their commitment to bring this guy in and make him the shortstop, or just see if he could do it. But he has been a real find for them, a real nugget. Now, you know, I thought early on that he was really young and that this was really impressive, but the guy is 24.
mm-hmm.
So, yeah, he played college and went to the corporate league. So
he's youngish.
He's going to be 25 this year. So yeah, youngish, if you want to call it that. But yeah, he's just getting used to playing this kind of workload with a game every day, just about. And that's going to wear him down. So I want to see how he reacts in June and July and as it gets warmer. But he has been really good for them early on.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because you know the typical, and I think this is an area where having Higuchi as the manager, having Alex Ramirez as the manager, is you have a manager who's, you know, who gets these young guys who are inexperienced and puts them out there and doesn't say, let's see how they hold up under the stress and strain of playing every day in the hot weather. You know, they're not used to it. Let's see if they can handle it. You know, it's a fitness test, or a moral fitness test, you know, see if they've got the stamina to play when their body's breaking.
Right.
But I suspect, you know, if you hear Alex Ramirez talk, and I suspect Higuchi's the same, these kids are in this situation. They're going to need a little support to get, if we give them a little help, and we, you know, teach them right and, you know, and give them a little help, they can get through it, as opposed to, let's see if this breaks our players or makes our team a winner. You know, like, I've seen so many players broken with that sort of thing. That used to be old Hanshin, and I don't mean to pick on the Hanshin Tigers, but man.
Well, that's what they did, then that's what they did. So,
well, what I'm specifically referring to the road trip of death in August, which, just to make a story short, you know, I talked to the pitching coach 1 year, 10 years ago, and I said, well, what do you do with the relievers who have to travel almost every other day and pitch, you know, warm up in the bullpen twice a week? What do you do differently to keep them sharp? Because I noticed that the biggest problem the Tigers had was that their bullpen got lousy in August. And he went, oh, nothing. We have to treat every game the same as every other game because this is Japanese professional baseball.
Get out of here.
Have to handle it.
Get out of here.
Yeah, he basically told me, get lost. What is this? What are you? What is this human, this thing? What are you, some kind of humanist? Damn.
Okay, yeah. The other guy who had gotten some time early on in the season is Tsuyoshi Sugano. And, you know, mm-hmm. he got chunks of playing time, but I think he's still finding his way and he's going to have to earn his way back. And, I mean, yeah, the guy wasn't hitting for power. He was another one of those guys who's maybe hitting a soft 300 when he was hitting well. Mm-hmm. But so, yeah, that part with Iguchi, I don't know if it was the plan to get young guys out there. And, you know, you think of Seiya Inoue, I keep thinking this guy is young as well and that he probably still
needs... he's inexperienced.
Yeah, that's
he's
all.
Not young
he's not
anymore.
He's not young. Yeah, he's going to be 29 in July. So this is a guy I keep thinking, yeah, he just needs more time. But he's going to be 30 next year.
Well,
he could be out of time
to use what he's got now. Yeah, indeed.
And so, you know, they had this game, and I was watching their game today, and the, you know, the announcer saying, yes, well, look at the Marines. They're bereft of power. They're down at the bottom of the Pacific League. They have, at the time he was talking, the announcer was talking, they have 14 home runs, and Hotaka Yamakawa of the Lions has 12 himself. And then, you know, the Lotte Marines.
13 now.
Yeah, the Marines hit two today, and Yamakawa hit one. So, I mean, but it's still pretty close. So, yep. They still don't have power. But there's one thing I wanted to do, which is to give Hideaki Wakui, the guy we like to beat on and berate, some credit. Because he has been a very good starter for them when you look at the games overall. Now, he hadn't won any games at Zozo Marine Stadium yet since the start of the season. But he beat the Hawks 3-2 on Friday. And he's given up some runs. He had given up 14 earned runs in 33 in a third innings at home. So that's really not going to get you a lot of victories if you have that high mm-hmm. an ERA at home, but he pitched well on Friday. They got a win, but he's really brought some. You know, Matt mentioned him as well. I hate to do that to these young guys too. These newcomers and ask them about pitchers, but he was able to come up with Wakui. Matt was, but yeah, he's not pitching that bad. So I do want. I mean, we know he can pitch, but it's just difficult to watch him actually throw and give up hits or just try to buzz the strike zone. And it's certainly the opposite of a beauty contest, right? It's not a thing of beauty that he's putting up there sometimes. And lots of base runners, lots of time between pitches, lots of mound meetings, lots of shaking off the catcher. And it's a tough watch sometimes. But when you look at it, the numbers are not that bad. In terms of
winning. No, they're not. And I think they were worse. You know, I mentioned this, at the start of the season when I had my, inspiration about the Marines, that they were not nearly as bad as I had, you know, I pictured without giving it any thought, that there were a lot of things I liked about the Marines. And, of course, then as soon as I said that, then Katsuya Kakunaka got hurt. And then one of the big reasons I liked the Marines was being doing rehab. But No, I thought one of the things was I thought the pitching would bounce back, which it did largely. Ishikawa has been he was not as dominant as he was a couple of years ago, but
he's better.
Yeah, better than much last better. Year. Wakui's vastly better than he was last year. He's won more games than he did last year, which is again not saying much. He won three, and now he's fighting 4-3 now or something. So no, it's good, and a couple of other things. I like the kids, and you know, and Takashi Ogino, who I haven't really, you know, I've smiled to on the sidelines, but to be honest, I haven't spoken to him since about a week before he ripped up his knee. And, Love Marines, Steve and I were chatting about him or, you know, tweeting about him today. And when he said,
Steve, the blogger.
Yep. Steve, the blogger he said, oh, I love Ogino. And I said, you know, and it's true. I remember when he was a rookie, he was not a young rookie, but you know, he was so fast that he was must watch. You know, he was exciting like Shohei Ohtani is exciting, like Ichiro is exciting. Because his speed, he was basically Billy Hamilton who could hit.
I don't remember the hitting part, but okay. Yeah.
Well, he could hit. You know, he did hit, and he was, I think, 26-0 as a base dealer or something.
I remember that.
Said, how long do you expect this to keep going? Well, I don't ever expect to be thrown out. But it was like if he hit a comebacker to the pitcher, a soft comebacker one, yes. to the pitcher, yeah, you had to wonder, is the pitcher going to be able to throw him out?
It was a tough play.
And I know he made everybody was jumpy around the infield as soon, you know, because you had to get the ball and get it off because he was just electrifying. And so I said, you know, at that time he was, you know, as exciting as Ichiro or Ohtani is now. And Steve says, oh, I still love him. And he's sort of getting back into his career, and he's playing, and he's being fun. Of course, he's sort of that prototype of the Marines player, the fast guy who really doesn't do anything but be fast.
Mm-hmm. A lot of guys like that. Slap.
Well, I think if he was 25-0, he ended up 25-3 as a base stealer in his rookie year when he was hurt. He did get thrown out three times. So anyway, yeah, I mean, he's, you know, you want to look at his numbers, they're really not that good. You know, if he's an everyday player, which he almost is, and he's, you know, got a 300 on base percentage, you got to think, wow, what's he doing? And the answer is, you know, they need some more. They need more than this guy's going to give them.
Yeah.
But he's a fun player, but yeah, yep. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, moving along. So, the other thing I guess I like about the Marines, and I'll say this about Iguchi, and it's not about his managing, but it's very typical when you switch managers, is that you know, players who basically were out of chances with a previous manager or never had a chance with a previous manager because he had a certain opinions or a certain way of doing things or a certain plan. New manager opens doors, and I think with Seiya Inoue, this is a door, you know, that is opened.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the story is, and you say that, you know, we discussed last week Taishi Ota with the Nippon Ham Fighters,
right?
And it is a point I've made a couple of times that usually you don't see players sort of plateau
mm-hmm.
until after they've you know batted 400 or 500 times, and Inoue's had a hard time getting those, just like Taishi Ota did in his whole career in all those years. He just never got that time to go up and learn to make the adjustments and go through the ups and downs as a hitter. And so I think this year we're going to see the real Seiya Inoue. It might be a better picture. We might see his real ability. Whether we see his real numbers or not is another matter. But the same, I think. And that was the reason why I said I don't expect Taishi Ota to be a lot better than he is now, because he's sort of in that area where we're going to see more or less all there is.
Mm-hmm.
The numbers might get better, but I doubt he's going to be a lot better.
Okay. Yeah, I wouldn't. You imagine his career arc. I don't know that it's peaked, but even if it hasn't, it's not going up that much higher. and
yeah, but with Inoue, we don't really know.
Well, like
yeah,
I said,
so with Inoue, we don't know, yeah. But we'll know at the end of this year, I think. And I think that's, you know, it's you know, he's a little too big to do an Elvis impression, but it's pretty much now or never.
Ooh, right. But again, I do like the crop of foreign guys. Tanner Shepherds, they brought him in. He's really helping out in the bullpen. I think he had to make some adjustments. I hope we can talk to him in the coming months as well. He's an interesting guy. He had to make some adjustments, and I think he has made them, and he's been pitching a lot better recently. Mike Bolsinger, he won his game today. He's winning. He's a winning pitcher for them, and that's, you know, that's saying a lot on a team that's losing. And I like him. He's doing the same thing that he did with the Dodgers, which is get guys to look for certain pitches and then confuse them with you know, changing speeds on the same pitch, or just throwing that knuckle curve that he's got. And just, you know, today it seemed like it was dancing a little bit in the wind out there. So I think that was actually helping him. So should be interesting for him. And then Edgar Olmos, I'm not sure how many more starts they're going to wait and see if he can make the adjustments, but because he's had some rough patches here early on. But and then you've got Matt, so I think they brought in some guys. They're trying to use that foreign group to help them at least compete for a playoff spot, and I think they can. And again, I think the Pacific League and the Central League, both of them are going to be close with the races. You look at what Oryx has been doing, and we'll get to the Pacific League talk in a little bit because I want to talk about one game in particular. But I just think it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough the whole way, so it should be pretty fun. Now, this brings me to a move that Tadahito Iguchi made in a one-run game on Friday. And it was in the ninth inning, and he had his closer, Tatsuya Uchi, on the mound, and it's 3-2. They're winning. Uchi allows a leadoff single, and he really hadn't been sharp recently. In fact, he has been struggling a little bit. So the Hawks play for the tie for some reason, and because that's what they do in NPB, I guess. And so they sacrifice. So they give Uchi an out, and the runner is on second base. And then the Hawks had just called up one of their new foreign players, Yurisbel Gracial, and he predictably strike out. Now, he's been hitting well on the farm, but, you know, you bring him up against the team's closer, and I didn't expect him to make contact. He fanned at a pitch and struck out. So that's like two free outs. So, I was just thinking, if somebody from the States, like a baseball expert and who knew about Japan a little bit, and knew what the guys could do, he would just be turning over in his seat, you know, trying to watch this game at the manager's, like, what is he doing this for? What is he doing this for? And why is this happening? But so Gracial strikes out. So Iguchi says, hey, I want to match up with the next guy. I don't want to have anything to do with Akira Nakamura. So they intentionally walk Nakamura, which goes against the book because he would be the winning run. He would be the fourth run were he to come home and score. And so he's putting the go-ahead run on base in the ninth inning. And he's facing, they went after Kenta Imamiya, and they got him out and they won the game. But I just thought, man, this is kind of this bold new thing that I like that Iguchi is doing. Now, you said you haven't watched a lot of the games, but I've been trying to watch the games and watch the moves, and he seems to me that he doesn't make those typical Japanese moves, and he's not worried about putting a guy on base if he thinks he has a better matchup, even in the ninth inning. And I really like that. I like that about him. I thought it was pretty.
I tend to think most Japanese managers tend to think that way because they tend to look at the one run. I would think they tend to look at the guy on second base more than the guy on first base, you know, as evidenced by the play we see so often is there'll be runners on, you know, you'll be ahead by a run. The fielding team will be ahead by a run. There's runners on first and second, and they'll bring the outfield in.
Way in, yeah.
To have a play at the plate, and then the batter will hit a ball that would be a single or an, you know, it would be a single or an out, but it goes to the wall. Because right. there's nobody there to catch it.
Yeah, yeah.
And
so pop fly
it ends
triples.
Up being a two, you know, a two. Yeah, yeah, exactly. It ends up as a two run double instead of an out or a single. And I see this over and over and over again. And I guess the Bay Stars don't do it as much as other teams do it. But boy, that's one of those things that drives me nuts. And I think also that they do like their intentional walks in Japan. Well, everybody likes intentional walks more than I do. So it's hard for me to judge what's unusual. So
yeah. Well, I just thought, yeah, this totally goes against the book. And I don't see managers saying, well, they would much rather bring in a pitcher to face that guy who they're more comfortable with the matchup rather than walking him to face another guy. Walking, or I should say, putting the winning run or go-ahead run on to face another guy. And that was what, but I mean, you know, I think Iguchi rides hot hands and Imami hasn't been hot recently. So he was going after the guy who was the essentially the weak spot in the lineup at the moment.
Well, there's a lot of questions there. I mean, Uchi's best pitch is always a cutter, and maybe it's, which is a good, it's a good pitch against a lefty. If you're locating it, maybe he wasn't comfortable with that. Nakamura's got a good play. I mean, there's lots of things involved.
And, yeah, Nakamura's
and
been tearing
you may
it up
also
recently.
Not.
Yeah, he's been really hot.
And you
recently.
May also, yeah, and you may also not like your left-handed options.
Yeah, they don't have any. Anyway, so let's.
I suspected that was yeah. a part of that yep. that equation.
All right, let's make a four-seam transition and talk about the Pacific League a little bit. Now the Lions and their high ERA. Which is not four anymore, have slowed down. And they've been getting blanked a lot recently. I think there was a seven-game stretch that they got blanked three or four times. But the most impressive pitching performance against them, I think, came Wednesday in a 1-0 mm-hmm. shutout at Tokyo Dome. And that was Naoyuki Uwasawa, the Fighters. And now, this was another game in which a manager was, I think, sticking with a guy, hoping that he would get a shutout. But this was a 1-0 game as well, and we talked about one of these last week with Akitake Okada of the Carp. And but in this case, I was for this one because I was watching the swings that guys were getting all night long against Uwasawa. Now I know his pitch count was high, and he had given up a couple base runners. So I guess once you get into that situation, you're not going to bring a closer in to try to help you escape a situation when. It's still a 1-0 game. I think with the Carp last week, they had already allowed the tying run before they made the pitching change. But in this case, Hideki Kuriyama stuck with Uwasawa, who finished it off. Pretty impressive shutout for him. And they showed some of the fans in the stands, and one female fan was just crying her eyes out. She was so happy for him. Uwasawa coming back from injury and everything, and throwing the shutout. So that was a fun game to watch.
It was. And he was just getting, a lot of soft contact. He was really dominant. He did. I wouldn't say his pitch count was that high, but it was reaching the maximum that you really want. So, of course, that changes. I was talking about that with a former Red Sox scout. And we were talking about Daisuke Matsuzaka, and he's going, yeah, you pitch so many, through high pitch count games, but it's a different game now than it was, 20 years ago. And guys would throw 160, 170. You still see guys throwing 200 pitches in a game whose names weren't Shintaro Fujinami. Mm-hmm. So, okay. Anyway, yeah, so that was good. I don't have I guess the only Pacific League comment I would have is that, Yoshinobu Yamamoto has given up some hits and runs now, so that little golden week he had about a golden 2 weeks
that's
in which he was absolutely untouchable.
That's the reliever for the Oryx Buffaloes,
the setup guy. Yeah, he was just executing. I think he was just repeating his mechanics so precisely that it was like a test tube. You know, it was like a pitching experiment, and everybody else was just like going, "Oh man,
we don't want to be in here. Get us out."
Exactly, pretty much. Yeah, it was lights out. So
yeah,
He's back to making mistakes now.
Back to reality. Yeah. The Buffaloes have improved their play recently. They're looking better. Despite how I feel about their ancient old school manager. I remember saying in the PL prediction show,
he's like 2 years older than me.
No, I mean his style of managing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm not saying that he's ancient. There's old school and then there's, you know, ancient old school. I mean, you know, he's teaching the teachers, you know what I'm saying? I said in the PL prediction show that this team really has the rotation to compete for a pennant. And I don't know whether I point at one spot that I can think of that's a real weakness. They seem to have the parts. So I don't know why they don't put it together. And I can tell you this, I really liked Hikaru Ito as the catcher a couple of years back, and he's gone. Like Kenya,
yep.
Wakatsuki has really pushed him out, and they give more playing time to Katsuki Yamazaki. You know, he's the next guy up. So, but anyway, they've been winning. They've got,
well, that's Oryx. That's Oryx's pattern. Guys earn, you know, they come up, they do really well. They earn a regular job, and then they just kind of get, they just sort of coast and coast away until in a couple of years you say, what happened to that guy? What happened to Shunta Goto? And what happened to Hikaru Ito? And what happened to Ryoichi? Well, I mean, guys also get sick and other things, but yeah, it's just so, at least with the Buffaloes now, it's more to do with injuries, like Nishino and Yoshida in the right fielder, Yoshida.
Yeah, he's back. He's in. But yeah, he started out.
And Ryoichi Adachi. Yeah. Although Ryoichi Adachi had other issues like forgetting to make plays and things after he, you know, this is a guy I was absolutely certain this guy was going to be the best shortstop in Japan. And then he just forgets to make plays sometimes. It's like he forgets why he's there. Yeah. So the fact that he's sick, you know, the fact that he got sick hasn't helped. But
yeah.
Anyway, yeah. So yeah, it's lots of. But you know, that's the thing with the Oryx. Nobody quite knows what's going on. So
yeah.
Maybe they're part of a much larger test tube experiment as well.
Perhaps. But I like you know, the newcomer Andrew Albers. He's pitching well for them. Leads them in wins. He's got a 5-1 record. After that, you know, the pitching, Daiki Tajima, he's got 4 wins. He's pitching well for them. So, you know, it's just weird. And then the bullpen, they've got a lot of guys coming out of the bullpen. You talked about Yamamoto. I like Sawata, the big kid. And they still got Kuroki, who pitched well. And then they've got Zenshin Masui. So, I mean, they've got guys who can get the job done, I think, more often than not. But again, with the batting, nobody's hitting great. Nobody's tearing it up at the plate. The foreign guys are hitting, you know, okay, with some power occasionally. Everybody's just occasionally hitting. Nobody's really steady. And,
Chris Marrero has been pretty good. Stefan Romero has been pretty good. Yeah. I mean, of course he was hurt, but he's back. And, those two guys have been consistently good when they've been playing and fit.
But yeah, they're hitting okay, but nobody's great. I mean, they're all about two. If you average them all together, they're all around 250. Then the regular starters, probably under 250. But again, they had a good stretch. I think they can continue, and I want to see how well they do. And the Eagles are starting. Like I said, they're waking up. They had struggled so poor with such poor play at the beginning, and now they have 14 wins, like I said, and they're 3 wins behind the Marines, and that's not a lot. And they're 4 wins behind the Buffaloes, and the Buffaloes are, I don't want to start looking at the standings too early, but the Buffaloes are in fourth place, and so, you know, if you win 4 in a row, you could be up there with the Buffaloes, perhaps. So
It's like lowered expectations.
There you go. All right, making a two-seam transition, let's take a quick look at the Central League. Now, I had an exchange with our buddy Coaster Freak this past week, and he was perplexed about the fact that the Dragons could dominate the Carp. And I said, hey, man, and this was only at home. The Dragons opened the season with the Carp, losing three in a row, and they could have won all three of those games. They just, you know, for one reason or another, one pitch or another, didn't get it done. But they were in most of the games until the end. But then they came back and they've played them six times at Nagoya Dome and had beaten them five in a row.
Yeah.
Until Thursday when they lost. So, yeah, I tweeted him to Coaster Freak. I said, look, they're professionals, number one. And I keep saying there's a fine line that's between winning and losing a lot of times. And, you know, you have to do things right. And the Carp just didn't execute. So, and you look at the pitchers that they had faced in that time. It was Shinnosuke Ogasawara, who's not a terrible pitcher. Dylan G, who just doesn't have the wins to go with it, but he's been putting out quality starts for the most part. Onelki Garcia, who won today, pitched really well against the Tigers. And then I think maybe the outlier might be Rydell Martinez, this kid who's maybe like just trying to find his way in professional baseball, and he's doing it in Japan. I'm hoping we can talk to him. I hope he speaks English. I doubt if he does, but anyway. And then Yuya Yanagi pitched really well against him, and then a guy Kazuki Yoshimi, who used to be the ace. So it's not like they threw chopped liver at them on the mound. So I mean, these teams can win, and like I said, I think it's going to take a lot of effort every night to win, and these games are not going to come easy because I think the teams in the Central League are really close.
So yeah, a couple of games that interested me. First was Akatsuki Azuma, the newest left-handed starter for the Bay Stars. It's sort of like they've got a factory there. They crank out left-handed starters a little more than one every year.
I tell you this, I think next year Alex Ramirez is not going to draft a pitcher because he's going to be tired of having too many good pitchers.
Yeah, well, that would be
Yokohama.
I can already see him smiling and laughing, but no, Bay Stars typically, as I said last week, traditionally had not recently, but traditionally had pretty good pitching staffs. But the thing with I haven't seen, now of course this was his fifth or sixth game. And he had lost both of his defeats had come to the Hanshin Tigers. And I don't know what was happening. But I suspect he was, now I put this on the internet. Is he just really hard to pick up? Basically what he did was, you know, he threw his changeup to the right-handers, changeup fastball, located his fastball. And then he threw his slider and fastball to the right-handers and an occasional curve both ways. To the lefties. And I had to think that they were having trouble seeing the ball because it's almost like every time they were looking fastball, he threw a changeup or a slider. And every time they were looking for a breaking ball, he snapped a fastball in on them. It was like they just had zero pitch recognition. So I asked, I threw that out there that, you know, what's going on? That are they not seeing it? And they said, and one of my Twitter followers says, no, the Tigers just can't hit. So I don't know that's true.
I don't think that's the case, yeah.
But they just couldn't get, they had about three balls that were hit hard enough to be hits.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, their one hit through the first eight innings wasn't one of those.
Yeah.
It was a jam job. And I think it was either Itoi or Fukudome, one of those older left-handed hitting guys, got a low breaking ball well out of the zone and flicked it off the very end of the bat, and it just sort of rolled over the shortstop and into left field. And that was the kind of luck that the Tigers were having. He just made him look really bad. So that was fun to watch, and I hadn't seen him pitch before, so I was thinking about that now. And the another one I watched, which was Friday's game with Tomoyuki Sugano. Of the Yomiuri Giants. He had his scoreless inning streak snapped at 29. He didn't have any. He had poor location with his fastball. Didn't have any feel for his slider. It was thrown every which way. It was moving. Kind of, sort of, okay, but they were really getting some hacks on him. And one of the what Sugano does is he commands all his pitches. I mean, he just goes there and he locates his fastball, he locates his breaking ball. They've all got good late movement, and you just go up there and you just hope he misses.
Yeah,
you know, it's like I'm just gonna look for a pitch in the middle of the plate, and I'm just gonna wait for one to come because I'm not gonna try to swing at anything else because I can't hit it. I mean, that's sort of the way it looks sometimes, that people just give up hope, you know, in the batter's box watching the bat, you know, in the on deck circle.
Yeah.
So he was really mediocre. And And then the weirdest thing was I shouldn't be mean, but to me it seemed about the dumbest thing you could possibly do. The Giants were trailing two runs in the third inning. The number seven hitter singles to open the inning, or walks to open the inning, I don't remember. They got a runner on first with no outs, and they bunt with the number eight hitter, Seiji Kobayashi, the catcher, so that Sugano, a career 100-something, 100 buck and change hitter, can, you know, even, you know, get them back in the game with his bat.
Yeah, that's a great plan.
That's a great plan. Of course, what happens is he singles, and then Hayato Sakamoto comes up and he hits a home run, and now they're back in the game.
Right.
And then, so, you know, it's sort of like, I wasn't listening to the announcers, and probably it's different now than it used to be. But 20 years ago, I guarantee you the announcers would have credited both Sugano's hit and the three-run home run to successfully executing a sacrifice bunt.
Right. Great management.
Because that's where 30 years ago, that's what it was all about. Just for those who haven't been in Japan as long as I have. Yeah, it was pretty horrible. It was really the dark days. It was like the dark ages. bunts will make it rain if we execute them properly.
Yeah.
So okay, so that was that. And I guess the other thing, and going back to Katsuki Azuma and the Bay Stars games against the Tigers, I was watching the slow motion, and Jason gave me some constructive criticism, Jason Crosby of the Japan Times, and I was talking about Yamasaki's splitter, and he says it's not really a splitter. He says he throws it like a two-seam. He just has kind of a split finger. He doesn't hold it quite like a splitter, but you know, it does what a splitter does. It looks like a splitter almost. It does exactly what a splitter does. And my favorite line from Jose Lopez was, his two-seamer is the best splitter in Japan.
There you go.
There you go. So, you know, it's sort of like, and so anyway, I was commenting because, you know, they showed a slow motion of his release, and you could see his fingers are spread on the ball. And Jason was astute enough to mention it's not a stereo prototypical splitter. But, you know, it looked awful like it. It acts awful like it. So I was thinking, well, if he called his fastball a curveball, would the announcers also call his fastball a curveball?
They're robots. They do whatever he says.
that's the tradition in Japan. So anyway, so that was that. But yeah, and kudos to Jason for setting me straight. I'll try not to be so ignorant in the future.
Yeah.
That'll probably last for about the next 10 minutes. Okay.
Yep. And then quickly, the Giants are, I mean, you know, they're 3 games over 500. They've been looking pretty good recently. They're getting good pitching, a lot of production with the bats throughout the lineup, so they're looking good, and so are the Carp. And I don't say that with too much surprise in my voice, But I think the surprise.
I didn't sense any surprise.
Good. I didn't mean for there to be much.
Okay. I see you had your sarcasm level set to zero. So, okay, good. Okay,
I'm gonna turn it up a little bit.
I know. People will think I got a different podcast partner today.
I'm sick or something.
I know. But, what's wrong with John?
Yeah, I heard the podcast. Are you okay?
Hashtag.
Don't worry, folks. Folks, John is okay. He's just, you know, he's got to turn up that setting a little bit.
There
okay.
you go. Daichi Osada, for me, is finally looking like the guy Hiroshima thought it had drafted, and you know, when they picked him, I think it was 2013. I think this is year five for him. But yeah, he's really been terrific. So I like what he's doing. And they really have been fortunate this past month where they had a bunch of rainouts and everything. So they didn't have to go to the extent of their entire rotation. So yeah, they've been able to put out Okada, Osada, Chris Johnson, who had to leave to go back to the States for the birth of his child. So mm-hmm. he's going to be out for a little while, but, so we'll see how they do without him. But anyway, let's make a two seam transition and talk about something. I've been really enjoying watching Shohei Ohtani this season with the Angels and, Cole Calhoun. Who? I'm sorry.
Who have you been watching?
Shohei Ohtani.
Oh,
with the Angels. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, that guy.
Nothing to do with NPB. But and this guy Cole Calhoun is just throwing guys out left and right, and it made me remember that we used to talk about some of the arms in NPB and who had the strongest arms and the most assists and all that stuff. So I asked you to look it up, and I think the last time we did it, we were talking about Jun Hirose of the Carp having this really strong arm, having a lot of outfield assists. But he has since retired.
Yeah, he had a cannon.
Yes, he did have a cannon. Yes, he did. So I asked you to check on the outfield assist leaders, and you have them for each league, or do you have them for all of NPB?
I could do it either way.
Well, let's go all of NPB. And okay. So let's start with the outfielder, and I'm going to try to guess.
Okay.
Just from off memory.
Okay.
And I'm going to go with... I'm going to go with Yuma Mune of the Oryx Buffaloes as having, I don't know, at least three.
He has two.
Two.
Which ties him in NPB for sixth.
Sixth. Okay.
With 10 other players.
10 other players. All right. So I was off one. Takayoshi Noma of the Carp.
Noma has been playing because Yoshihiro Maru is hurt.
Yes.
And I don't see him anywhere. He's got a good arm. Oh, hold on.
He's got one. Only one. All right.
One, but it's a double play. He's had a double play as well.
Well, the thing that it's hard to I mean, I know who's got strong arms. It's just that I don't know who has the assist, because the guys with the really strong arms, players don't run on them so much. They don't challenge them. So you have the opportunity.
It's a dynamic. And we were talking about this before the show, and it's hard to tell just from the assist totals. And
definitely.
And I was thinking about this. This is one of the things that you really have to look at as a team. And one of the things I think Bill James did really, really well when he made his win shares, and sorry, you war people, you know, you close your ears if this is offensive.
Sorry, you war people, warmongers.
Warmongers, essentially, yeah. I mean, you know, he starts with a team and works backwards, you know, gets wins and the results. And there's a lot of things you can do with team results that you can't do with individual totals, simply because the teams that play the worst defense tend to have, in some respects, they get the most chances.
Mm-hmm.
The more outs you don't stop, the more chances you have to make plays. So you have guys with the amazing defensive records. They look like, oh wow, he's got a zillion assists because there's a zillion guys on base.
And they're challenging him.
Aren't stopping. In whatever position he might be playing. So there's that context issue is a huge issue. And as John pointed out, the, you know, runners you know, it's always good to have a better arm than a worse arm and a more accurate arm, a quicker release. But sometimes, you know, having a good enough arm and a poor reputation is even better.
Right, because that'll get you opportunities to throw guys out.
Yeah, you know, I mean, who Tetsuya Matsumoto? I mean, he had a noodle for an arm, but he made accurate throws. Mm-hmm. He had a quick release, and he made an accurate throw, accurate high looping throws to the infield, and nobody thought he could throw them out, but he threw everybody out.
Let's get back. I have one more guy, and I just think it's because I don't think it's because his arm is strong. I just think that because a lot of people run on him, and that's Takashi Ogino with the Marines.
Well, he's got four outfield assists. He's tied for the most in NPB.
Ooh, I got one.
You did. He's got a double play in there as well, which is really nice because it's not meaningless stuff. And Yosuke Hirata also has four assists.
Oh,
and
the Dragons
is coming.
Yeah.
Right.
Dragons right fielder. Yep.
Right. And what I like about him is that, well, he doesn't have any errors and also 58 putouts. So as opposed to 76 for Ogino, makes me think he's had fewer, touches of the ball to get four assists. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I'm working on a contextual thing, you know, where we can put together like doubles to the positions and the chances that they have and compare them to the league. But that's a little way off.
Okay. All right. And who are the other guys who have four?
Four. Just Ogino and Hirata.
Okay. All right.
There's a bunch of guys with three: Zoilo Omonte, Carlos Peguero, your guy Sugano from the Marines, Alex Guerrero, Vladimir Valentin. Yeah, that's a long list. Itoi Fukudome.
Yeah. Okay.
So on.
All right. And
I did want to mention, I mean, just before we move on, the teams are probably more interesting, as I said, because of the team context, which you can get into, because it's hard to. You know, it's hard to look at, you know, how many balls go to this guy when he's playing left field unless you have somebody counting every ball.
Uh-huh.
But if you have the team, you can see, okay, now how many balls are hit into the outfield when there's a chance to throw out a runner on the base.
Mm-hmm.
So the Dragons and the Marines, led by those aforementioned two fellows, have 10 assists each. And the Dragons... you know, I looked at it as a percentage of opportunities. It's not a very good measure, and there's very little difference between them. But the two teams who are the best, basically, for every ball hit into the outfield with a chance to throw out a runner, 3% of those are getting turned into outs by the Marines. Mm-hmm. And the Dragons. And 0.5% of those balls are getting turned into outs by the Yakult Swallows. 0.8 by the Oryx Buffaloes. 1.3% by DNA. 1.3% by the Giants. 1.3% by the Hawks. And then Cebu and Hanshin are Rakuten are in the middle. The Fighters are on the strong side. The Carp are on the strong side. And then the Dragons and the... And it's sort of not a surprise that the Dragons and the Marines are up there, because their games are so built on speed and the lack of power.
Mm-hmm.
That they, I think, you know, having an arm is sort of, you know, you don't hit for power, but at least you can keep the other guys from taking extra bases, you know, the extra bases that you don't hit.
Right. Yep. You know that philosophy. Okay. So let's do the catchers, and what you have is the team information. So,
That's correct. The team caught stealing percentage.
Okay. So what team?
I'll give you a hint. Team number one doesn't really have a number one catcher.
Yeah, I have three names written down, but geez. If you tell me that, then I would go with, SoftBank Hawks, Takuya Kai. And I guess I would, I'm saying the SoftBank Hawks.
The Hawks have allowed 24 stolen bases, thrown out 8. I didn't count the one pickoff. Wow. They're 250, which is right in the middle of the table.
Wow. So I'm wrong. And, you know, I've always liked Seiji Kobayashi's arm, but he basically is the regular catcher with the Giants, so that rules them out. And the other name I have is Tatsuhiro Tamura of the Marines. So I guess I'm striking out in this one.
Mm, who I also like, who's not having a great year, or the pitchers. Maybe it's all the foreign pitchers. I don't know. The Marines are on the bad side this year. The Giants are on the weak side.
Mm.
I guess the Lions, it's not surprising that they've been playing Tomio Mori a lot, Masatoshi Okada, and they're not really good at throwing out runners. So they're pretty far down. The Carp are at the bottom. The Dragons are at the very bottom, allowed 30 stolen bases and have caught 5. Now, the number one team in Japan is the Hanshin Tigers.
Oh.
Yeah. Who would have thunk it?
I would not. I wouldn't even go that route. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's their percentage?
15 steals and 12 runners thrown out. I mean, that explains why the Tigers are even above 5, you know, are close to 500 pretty much. I mean, that's just suicide.
Yeah, controlling the running game.
Indeed. Okay. Which is usually a Hawks weakness, actually. I mean, that's sort of one of the things the Hawks haven't done in recent years is control the running game. They just settle it. Okay. Don't we try not to get guys on base in the first place. That's their point.
Okay.
So,
all right. Thanks for that. Let's go to fielding questions. All right, so we got one from our buddy Max in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. and this is via Twitter. And he says, how much mm-hmm. credit does Sadaharu Oh get in the Daiei/SoftBank Hawks success over the past 20 years? And who is the mastermind behind the Hawks dynasty, if there is one? #high heat. Jim.
Okay, credit. Well, I'll tell you, if Sadaharu, Sadaharu Oh walks into a bar in Fukuoka, you know, what's the chance that the bartender's going to ask him to pay the bill? He's got all the credit he wants. As far as what credit does he have for 20 years? He was the man. The Hawks actually have had two dynasties in this period. They had a 1999 to 2006. 2005 dynasty,
mm-hmm.
In which they basically led the league in about, let's see, in a 7-year span, I think they led the regular season in wins 5 times.
Mm.
Okay. And he was the manager at that time. But I would give all the credit for that to Riku Onemoto, who was their front office leader, who died, sadly enough, the spring of 1999, before they won their first pennant, before Daiei won its first pennant. Nemoto, as some of you know, was the key figure in the Hiroshima Carps' first dynasty. He was one of the managers who built up that huge talent base, Kinugasa and Yamamoto and those guys. And then he was the last manager of the Nishitetsu Lions, the Fukuoka-based Lions, and then he became the first manager of the Seibu Lions, and then they kicked him out to make him essentially the general manager. And he was the one who built up the Seibu Lions dynasty from the early 80s to the early 90s. And then he went to SoftBank and he did the same thing, and then he died. So he was that guy. He's one of my, if I had a list, I'm sorry going on over long, but if I had a list of dead baseball people I could talk to, he's probably number one on my list.
Wow.
The next is Sadaharu Oh, because since he retired from managing and he became chairman of the Hawks, and people thought, well, in fact, one Hawks executive I knew said, when he came into the front office, said, oh, he's an old guy. You know, he had, you know, his stomach removed because of cancer. He's not going to be doing much. Wrong. Oh runs that front office. I don't say he runs it on a day-to-day basis, but he has a huge amount of input. He has a huge way of setting the tone for the way that organization does business. So he gets a lot of credit. He is essentially the second Hawks dynasty from 2009 to the present is I think his responsibility. So a lot of credit for that. Not as manager. He was a pretty horrible manager, actually.
Yeah, you've said that number of times on the show,
I do. Sorry, guys.
It's all right. Okay. No, I'm just reminding people and telling the new listeners as well. For me, yeah, I think, you know, I had this discussion, I think, via Twitter or maybe via short email with Jason Koskrie, but I said, look, players don't win championships. Organizations do. And to do that, you have to have a strong base, and to do that, it's top to bottom and then bottom to top. But I think it starts at the top, and so I think even going above to Masayoshi Son, the CEO, I think he brought in good people. O was not able to manage, so he made him the chairman, and I think that was a great decision. Mm-hmm. And because I think the philosophical aspects and what kind of players you want to draft and how to construct the roster and what kind of baseball you want to play, that's not always up to the field manager. And while Koji Akiyama did well and Kimiyasu Kudo has his own little things that he wants to do and aspects of the game he wants to institute with the team, I think it all comes from the top. And you're from O and Son together. They formulated a plan. So I would say those guys are walking arm in arm in terms of developing the team. O says, tells him what he wants, what he needs, what the vision is. And Son says, here's the money. And what else can I get for you? Because you can't.
Well, go ahead.
Yeah. You, as Bill Parcells said once a long time ago, you can't ask me to cook dinner if you're not going to let me buy the groceries. And I think when O says these are the kind of groceries I want, I think, you know, someone has to foot the bill and they have to give the okay. And I think that's a team. That's not one person giving instructions. That's a team situation.
Well, that's true enough. The Hawks have had, and I've mentioned this, they hire really good people.
Yes.
With all around the organization. And I'll tell you a story. They set up their new their minor league facility. They moved to a new minor league facility about 3 years ago. And just prior to that, you know, they were conducting, a typical Japanese team would say, you know, how cheaply can we do this?
Mm-hmm.
Because we're not going to make any money doing this. So how cheaply can we do this? And, you know, somebody might want to ask the staff, you know, what's the best thing we could do? But no, I doubt anybody would really listen, because everything would be decided by what kind of lease they could get. You know, how many days they could use the facility, you know, what the costs are.
Right.
The Hawks medical staff said, look, there's a kind of a rehab setup installation we want, but it has to be done before you build it. You know, it's going to be expensive, but if you decide to do it later, it's going to be like three times as expensive. I don't know if it was a pool or I think it was some sort of a pool.
Okay.
And he said, everybody in the majors has got them. All the best staffs have it in the majors. And the Hawks said, okay, you do that.
Right.
And that's where they are. And it's why the Hawks have this huge talent surplus right now, is because that's the way they're building their team. So they've taken the money they make up front and they've invested it in the team, and they're just a juggernaut.
Yeah.
And now you see the Central League team I see that's copying them is the Hiroshima Carp. The Hiroshima Carp are now investing in their minor league and their development, to an unprecedented degree for a Central League team.
Mm.
And, that's just really, they're going to be tough to stomp.
Yeah. I mean, I had this discussion with one of my cousins recently, and he said the players are more important than the coaches. And I said, no, everyone is equally as important. The coaches, you can have a great weapon, but if you point it in the wrong direction or you're not using it the right way, you're not going to get the results. So it's all important that you have to have good weapons. I mean, you have to know how to use them and deploy them the right way to get the results you want.
Yeah, I mean that's a reasonable analogy. It's not a simple answer, but you know, but our business is built on simple answers and pseudoscience, so it's pretty good.
Okay, And with that, we will talk to you next week. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you for the question, Max. We appreciate it. MP3s are always welcome, guys. Send us a note on Twitter at JBW Podcast with the hashtag High Heat, or send questions by email to yakyujohn@gmail.com, or you can also hit us up on the Facebook page and leave us a comment there. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballpark, if I'm lucky.